See, we stopped there right before OB 41 on the bottom of 280. Mighty One fell, he lies on the ground. Power must subside for the sake of life. Remember, power was Siegfried. Izdubar grows by loss. Now, the circumference of outer life should be made smaller. I see that as all images of the self. Becoming conscious means a making smaller of the self. And that's often experienced as a kind of a disappointment. Oh, I wrote the book. Now what? So what? It might even be behind postpartum depression. The thing is finished, and then all that anticipation, now what? A new image pops up, though. The fire on the right-hand column. Go down a couple of lines. Come to the solitary fire, you blind and lame ones. So that would mean both of them. And here, of both kinds of truth, the blind will be lame, that's what we already said, and the lamed will be blinded. Yet the shared fire warms both in the lengthening night. And so the original passion that led to the self leads to a warmth which is what accompanies being able to establish a reciprocal relation between ego and self. That's how I understand that. This fire is a new thing. This is just as Izdubar was new, so is the fire.
Now, how did you say that? The warmth allows a reciprocal relationship?
Yeah. If people who are in touch with the self have a warmth about them, and I think that's the fire that they're talking about. It's when you don't know who you are that you have to pretend. And it's when you do know who you are and you are fulfilling your meaning, a confidence and an openness accompanies that.
And that's a term, that's an alchemical term too, isn't it? Secret fire?
I guess it probably is, yeah.
Yeah, there's a whole thing on fire. And I made a painting called Secret Fire, which I thought was all like original, but no. Then I found in alchemy, that's a term that describes a whole series of things.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if he knew that.
I doubt it.
He hadn't studied alchemy yet.
I hadn't studied alchemy yet, nope.
Yeah, the Secret Fire. Mm-hmm. And it's associated with the Logos.
Yes. Well, I think that is the essence of those italicized passages.
So is the fire created from the self being lame and the ego being...
Apparently, that's what I would have to conclude, yeah.
So when the path is narrowed, the self desire for your life is narrowed, and you trust in that,
mm-hmm.
and that creates this fire that warms your life.
Yeah, that's how I understand it. I mean, he just pulls this out of nowhere, really. Okay, now it gets confusing again. The ancients called the saving word the Logos an expression of divine reason. So much unreason was a man that he needed reason to be saved. Should we look at those maybe two sentences? Logos would be, in the best sense, what we call spirit. The inner drive toward fulfilling yourself. The problem is that, it's a factor that forms. Does that make sense? it's what gives form to your life. So that you're not spread all over the place. And that can either work for you or against you. It works for you if it's in service of communicating the self's pattern to you. But that forming factor still tries to give form even when you're no longer in touch with the self. So that's the origin of rigidity. And I think we have to realize he's using the word in both senses. But the ability to understand, to be moved by an inspiration, to realize it in the world is part of forming your life. That's logos.
Also here he's talking about the idea of, I guess, a new logos.
Well, there's a new and an old logos.
And the old one.
Yeah, the old logos, when he says man was, where does he say it? There's so much unreason. He's talking about the birth of Christ.
Right, that was the old logos.
That was the old logos. Had to be super disciplined because we, humanity, was so undisciplined. That has run its course in certain folks. But let's say in the religious right, that's what's moving them. That old logos, which is just pure rigidity.
Is that coming from the unconscious, or is that a conscious phenomenon?
Yeah, it comes from the unconscious.
But it sounded proportional.
It's totally out of sync with what needs to be.
So it's the demon side of the unconscious.
Yeah. Or the demon side of the previous religious understanding.
So the unconscious is dealing with these people in a totally different way, you
yes.
could say?
Mm-hmm.
Or they're misinterpreting the unconscious.
Yeah, they're happily seated within the old structure.
But you know, they report the unconscious telling them to do this and that and the other very specifically.
Oh, I would like to see their dreams though.
Yeah.
That's the difference, I think.
Yeah, exactly. So you don't think that, you think it's more, as Anne says, a matter of misinterpretation?
I think they are being moved by something that at one time was genuine. But if you, I think, if you looked at their dreams, you would also see there's a new logos, a new spirit trying to shift their attitude. And they're not in touch with that. They're killing it. So they're using the old logos to kill the new logos.
Mm-hmm. They're really scared. What does that mean?
I suppose the old logos would all be up in their consciousness now as, you know, their interpretation of the Bible.
Yeah, yeah.
Also in like case of yours and stuff, you're
projecting
on
your shadow. Yeah. The old logos and projection go hand in hand. It always has to be renewed.
Mm-hmm.
In every era, this is Ion, of course, in every era, it surfaces with a new message. And that message gets out of date, and a new message is required. But lacking the tools of hearing the new message, the old message is fought for all the more strongly. I think we can say that about fundamentalist Islam, and we can say that about fundamentalist Christianity. It's the same thing. And of course, who is fighting? Fundamentalist Christians are essentially fighting fundamentalist Islam. It's two outworn systems. If one waits long enough, one sees how the gods all change into serpents, meaning become poisonous. The values that are said to be rooted in that old-time religion become poisonous. This is the fate of Logos. In the end, it poisons us all. Now, this is what kind of where I felt you were right on target, Carol. This is a transformation of the God image. That the values based in an old understanding of God need to change. And thinking we're being religious, we spread poison and paralysis around us, and that we want to educate all the world around us into reason, into the old reasonable way of doing things. You can subjugate yourself, shackle yourself in irons. Whip yourself bloody every day. You have crushed yourself, but not overcome yourself. Precisely through this, you have helped the powerful one strengthen your paralysis and promoted his blindness. So by thinking you are serving God or serving anything through rigidity and fulfilling ritual forms, you're simply stuck in rigidity. I think maybe that's the essence of that paragraph. Tyrannically force the Logos on others. Now, all of this, I think we could look at culturally, that, remember, Nietzsche, God is dead, and it wouldn't be too long before the major philosophers in Europe said the same thing, Heidegger, Camus, Sartre, and so on. Jung is now toying with the idea, and will continue toying with the idea, that God is dead. Good riddance. I remember Freud, too, was an atheist. Then the bottom of 280 talks about the power of the self's attack. And 281... even though you are under attack, you cannot kill it. And the attack, that's the top of 281, the attack would be this desirousness or greed or some powerful longing. Or some powerful infatuation overtaking you. And then he says, you should bind Holy Sebastian. That's a Christian saint who was apparently depicted as being shot with arrows. So you should attack the selves attacking you, is what he's saying. But you see, I don't think he would say that later in his life. This is part of the ridiculousness. What he doesn't understand is if you hear it, it will present a different face to you. But he doesn't know that yet.
Attack the self attacking you.
Yeah.
Where I'm going with this is trying, this negative animus in women, I'm trying to relate it to
that. Could be it. That could be what's going on.
Yeah. Okay. And whoever shows up that is in service,
they hate it.
that more.
Mm-hmm. Just hate it. Putting yourself back in his shoes for a second, remember he's overwhelmed with passion, and he's trying to get a grip. And I think, in his mind's eye, this is one alternative that occurs to him. He'll supersede it, certainly. You might say this is like cognitive behavioral therapy. You shoot down the false ideas. Or we try to, as he will later realize, get behind what's causing the idea to find what that thing behind it wants. But he's not there yet. So always keep remembering, if you get confused, he admits it's ridiculous and sublime. Under some circumstances, maybe this would be valid, but not many. If you're talking to a psychosis, you just have to say, that's nuts. You can't take off your clothes and run around the neighborhood. If you do, you're going to end up in jail. I don't care who's telling you to do it. See what I mean? That's really attacking it. But under very, I don't think I've ever talked like that to anybody. But one knows, maybe one has to, but still. It's power versus power.
It would still be only for a time.
Yeah. But you can see he's trying to bring a power against another power. This is like Siegfried. This is how Siegfried would deal with it. Absolutely. He's just going, he's just teetering. And he's feeling kind of desperate, I would think. So he then picks up in the second paragraph, talking about Izdubar again. He came to me from the east. You know where Gilgamesh came from? Iraq. Could this be about Iraq? Zarathustra also came from that area. So I don't know how far to take the east. Mm-hmm. But it's worthy of consideration, I think.
Well, it's all in the later paintings of it. Minarets and
Eastern. Abraxas?
Yeah.
Even the white
mosque. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what to say the East means here, but
I suppose something. You know, something is coming to him from the east that he has to retain part of. And I mean, it's almost as though that's what Islam is happening with us. Something's coming to us from the east. You know, they speak about a relatedness in that part of the world that we don't have
anymore. I think it could be Eros.
And a connection to the heart. And it comes to us from the east now.
Good. I don't know, have you seen the movie Paris? Not Paris at Midnight, not... There's three Paris's out.
Yeah.
Not Paris, yeah, Parisian Town. It's just called Paris. But it's a story of a guy who... young French guy who discovers he has to have a heart transplant. And he meets a young woman. You don't know whether he's going to survive the heart transplant. I don't want to ruin it for you, but... You don't know whether he's going to survive the heart transplant or not. But he meets a woman, and she's Muslim. And he says, when he learns that he has to have a heart transplant, he says the world is so cold. And when you hear the shop owner who is employing this young Algerian woman, Muslim woman, the shop owner says she's very warm. So that I just look for hints how this stuff could be appearing in pop culture. And it could very well be that somehow, ironically, that the message is warmth. Eros.
And on her apron are hearts.
Oh, on whose apron?
The Muslim woman.
Is it really?
Damn, you guys are good.
I'll have to have another.
Hearts, I'm
at,
sure.
At the
bakery.
Bakery.
Yeah, I think so. Either that or a shirt that she had on. Uh-huh. On it. Yeah, at one point.
It's a beautiful film. It's a chick flick kind of, but maybe not also. I don't know. It's got some serious stuff to it.
So we perceive that as power coming to us, and so we answer back with power.
Yeah. Well, it's threatened.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you could be sure a Muslim would never say, "You're dying. We will not care for you." Whatever else is wrong with them, that community spirit cares for its members. So that's Eros right there.
Well, the compassion moves them to do the suicide.
Yeah.
I mean, that, and we don't have approval.
Right.
Like, how could
they? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we're not done with that. We don't think we will be for a while. So there's these. Let's say Eros, then. Your guess is as good as mine. I opened his eyes and lamed his powerful limbs with a poison stab. A primordial grown child, and he lay like a child, as that which he was, a child, a primordial grown child that required human logos. So it's taking understanding to help the self make the transition to relatedness. And he says, "I shall not let him die." The next paragraph, I think, repeats quite a bit, but the key sentence would be, divinity and humanity should remain preserved. See where I am there? 5 lines down in the paragraph, beginning with, you need. Divinity would be the integrity of self. Humanity would be the integrity of the ego. And he's wrestling with the idea, which he's just contradicted above, that these two should both be preserved. Earlier he says you shoot it full of arrows. Here he says they both should be preserved. You can see how the thoughts are just flying all over the place. But I think that's the truer statement. Ego and self both have their standpoint.
And the flame is the middle way.
And the flame is the middle way. Now, is this the first time he's used that word, middle way? I went through it and I made a list. I believe this is what he has said so far.
Is that on our page?
No. What's that?
The very just said.
Oh.
It's the last line of that paragraph that starts, you need to undertake only half the way.
Okay, I see.
I just looked quickly last night. Let me write this down. On page 247, he talks about the serpent going from right to left, kind of in anticipation. And 250, he talks about forethinking and pleasure, remember? Uniting, and a third arises.
What page is that?
250. On 279, he talks about uniting the rejected opposites. I think it's the first time he's used the term middle way here on page 281. He'll use it again on page 284. I believe what we're slowly seeing is Jungian psychology emerging out of all of this contradictory stuff.
Would he have read Wilhelm by this time?
No.
Okay.
I don't think so.
See, that idea of fire in the middle way, that's in that alchemical image of the secret fire, which I found out after I made my image.
The fire is the middle way.
The fire is the central thing that unites the four elements, and that's how I made my painting.
Mm-hmm.
And then I read in alchemy that you start with the fire, the secret fire, and then the other elements organize around it, you know, earth, air, fire, water. Mm-hmm. But the fire is the beginning, the middle, the organizer. So he would find that out later.
I believe, again, if you prove me wrong, that's fine, but that's how I understand it. And see, this fire isn't the fire of impetuous sexual desire. It's the fire of Eros. It's a warming fire. Because look, he uses the word harmonious.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing harmonious about untransformed eroticism.
Yeah, I think von Franz relates that fire to Sophia. She does that in Aurora.
In the next paragraph, it repeats the lame and the blind and the lamed. But he does refer to falling into the hands of the living God and picks that up in the first sentence in the last paragraph of the first column. And that would mean then that the original untransformed erotic or untransformed hate or depression or failure, an overpoweringly raw experience. What he's realizing is that overpoweringly raw experiences, good or bad, can lead to an awareness of who we are. Sorry.
How can it lead to an awareness of who you are?
Oh, if you are, this is his way. If you're working with your dreams,
right,
and aware of the conflict you've fallen into, mm-hmm, that you both have a fire, hot fire burning in you, and a desire not to destroy your life or your relationship or relationships or your job, if you can accept both of those and try to navigate, then the unconscious starts generating the middle way that will allow both to live. Yeah, I don't know how you could do it without dream work. But again, remember what I think is going on here. We're seeing Jungian psychology be born. This is where he's getting it. Oh, there is such a thing as a middle way. And see, that's just totally different from Freud. You can also read this as thinking all of this stuff is him separating his viewpoint from Freud's. For Freud, you sublimate. For Jung, you are crucified and guided. That should take us to the first full paragraph on the second column of 281. See, we are actually getting some sentences done. And I think he repeats a lot here. If my God is lame, I must stand by him. So, as we incarnate the self, we have to live with the deflating aspect of that experience. We think we're going to write the world's best book, and we write an okay book. That's a simple example. The reality always seems less than the fantasy of what we were going to do. I'm just looking at a couple of the key sentences because I think this is a lot of repeat. He draws his bow 7 lines down. He draws his bow against ever more distant goals. So the self sets the goals. Kind of what I was saying, again, just a repeat, but a good description. Of the unconscious self, go up from the bottom of that paragraph, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 lines. His essence is blind, excessive longing, and tempestuous force. That's the unconscious self in operation. How do you compare this with Freud? For Jung, the self is behind this desire. For Freud, it's just a biological reality. My essence is seeing limitation, making that thing real and living through the limit of the thing becoming real. Get on to the last paragraph in that section. Go up 1, 2, 3, 4 lines up. We must think of his healing, his Isdabar or the self, and yet again I feel it quite clearly that my life would have been broken in half had I failed to heal my God. Hence, I abided with him in the long, cold night. So the cost of commitment to the self.
Is he speaking here, do you think, of helping his God through its transformation?
Yes. That he has to follow the route that this process is laying out for him. And he could have forgotten his Eros problem. He could have built a bigger house. He could have maintained a bigger professorship at the university. But he gave all that up. Uh, And we got some pictures, image 44 and 45.
I'm all ears.
Here's our dragon. Eyes, mouth, body, legs.
Oh my God.
Okay. And it's back.
Okay.
Okay.
I love it.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. Now it's as though this dragon is itself the light of dawn.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Aurora. The rising dawn. You know that dark dragon aspect of her coming to rising up to be fulfilled. It appears to be it's the beginning of the temple.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. I thought so too.
Yes, there's a temple. And see what forms the temple is also a starry firmament.
Mm-hmm.
And that speaks to Sophia as Aurora again, mm-hmm. because she's the pattern of our faith, mm-hmm. which is like a sacred temple.
Oh, yes, sir. Do you think there's a connection between the dragon and the dragonfly?
I think the dragon is a specific aspect of the dragon.
Well, first thing, I have to check whether that play on words carries over to Journey.
Mm-hmm.
I'll check. It may not.
And also remember that the first big manifestation of yourself in the world.
Do you know whether that's a sunset or a sunrise?
I think he said it's a dawn, doesn't he?
Dawn?
Let's see. Well, the second day is coming. It must, perhaps it is a dawn.
Yeah, that's HI 46. At the end of that paragraph, it says, "Hence I abided with him in the long, cold night."
Mm-hmm.
So,
probably a sunset, huh?
I don't think so.
No, I think it's a sunrise.
Do you?
He's been with him through the night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. And now the sun is
and
rising.
And just
because it's
him
just
and
before
the
second day.
Yeah, that's right. What I think.
And what did you say about the dragon and the sunrise?
I said that the dragon seems to be part of, one with the dawn light. It is the dawn light.
See, because the next paragraph on the second day is Dabar may lay silent and stiff all night until daybreak.
Yeah, that definitely looks
like
I
see.
To me.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to agree with you.
You want to tackle 45?
Mm-hmm. I might say that one pretty
good. You were getting worn out?
Thank you.
egg's going to come up in the next chapter, of course.
Right, yeah, that egg's going to continue on for a long time.
Yeah, now the snake has a head. Mm-hmm. And the snake looks to me like it's emerged from the dark star.
Mm-hmm.
Now the dark star, I use as a symbol of inferior function in my work. And it looks to me as though that's the way Jung is using it, too. I don't know the history of the word dark star, or if there is one in the literature.
I don't know either. There's a dark sun.
What about in...
Rock
and roll? No, just the study of the universe, that there's a dark star.
Well, they've just recently discovered that there are red dwarfs that are dark, but this is just like 2 weeks ago they discovered this. that they're dark and they only have a temperature of approximately that of the human body. So they emit no light.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a very, very recent discovery. And that's the only dark star I know of in astronomy. But, it seems to me like that background is sort of like fire.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Or lava.
Smoldering.
It's smoldering.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Really.
I think he makes a reference to the dark star on page 279. In the paragraph that talks about the historiated initial authority.
270.
The sun's empty darkness.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He calls it the sun's empty darkness.
And again,
what's the
paragraph here?
The one that has HI-40 uh-huh. in front of it. In the very middle there, I began to suffer from the sun's empty darkness.
But you know, in this image too, the man himself is basically the temple.
Mm-hmm.
He's supporting this whole process.
Mm-hmm.
And then this golden thing comes almost as though it comes from his head like a crown.
Mm-hmm.
And it supports this emergence of this golden headed thing.
And we've seen that in the judge and Sandra and Kyle and the head
in her
This
is such a complicated, I
mean,
I could say a lot of things.
Well, say it.
I don't like to string it all together in my head.
Hey, we're used to disconnected thoughts.
But you know, he's carrying the abstraction of the old logos forward. And he's using this new center.
Can you get that on?
Yeah, it's okay.
And he's using this new center of what's coming to him from darkness, from the unconscious, as the center for the new logos. And yes, he surrounds it with the old logos and supports it all through his own human efforts. You know, in which, in effect, he's crowned. He's divine himself, or participates in the divine, you might say.
Almost as if all of those become the womb for the egg and so forth.
That's right, that's the
mentality,
the idea of the protective circle.
And you see the image of
that
temple is repeated down here
mm-hmm.
in the blue area.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You say it's staggering when you hold it all up. Do you remember what comes in the next? He says,
turn into a fantasy and then I can carry you into a fairy
tale. Oh, yeah. Oh, wow. Wow.
But I think that's part of the ridiculousness. He would never say that.
Well, that's he, eventually he speaks of it in a way that makes sense when you think it's about his place of thought. But to say it just like that in the beginning almost seems to be saying that the null of fantasy is nothing. But then he clarifies.
That's Freud's idea. See, the religion is just a fantasy.
Right. But
so he's trying that out.
It doesn't take him long to say
that.
It
doesn't take him long to say no.
But totally relevant and equal to reality.
Right. But you see him kind of flirting with his idea that, oh, religion is just something we make.
But this is such an enormous presence that he is witnessing that he has to think of it as fantasy as well. He can't hold it up. He can't give it. Mm-hmm. He's not storming it. But fantasy. I think it makes perfect sense.
I think this image is so clever.
It reminds me of another painter I know.
It's true.
It really does. Well, and the hidden aspects.
Right. And of course, it's the unconscious that creates the. But the temple as the cosmos,
you know, I just thought this looks like it's in quarters, like there's a line here and a line there.
Uh-huh.
But I think
yeah, it's got all sorts of linear elements.
A colleague of mine had a dream, and his wife died. Before she died, she had a dream. She was in the woods with a rampage in the bear, and there was a stream of water that the bear would drink.
Wow.
It's a source of very dangerous things. Mm-hmm. It can kill you.
But you can see that presence in the background.
Here it's incubating.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not killing.
Exactly.
It's incubating. It's the
real.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, nice work.
Well, we got as far as second day. Not bad. For our first time back, because it always takes a while to get, I think, to get our energy back into the text. So, I think I had you read to 284. I don't think we'll get past that, but just to be safe, in case a miracle occurs, read to the opening of the egg, page 286. I don't think we'll get that far, but I'm glad you're all back and enjoy working, and I sure do appreciate your input. And I'll see you in 2 weeks.